Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You're about to listen to Bananas for Bonanza, Episode 17. This is Andy Daly. Hello! Here on this free feed, I'll be re-releasing all of the back episodes of Bananas for Bonanza, one every other week. If you want to hear new episodes ad-free, please subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/AndyDaly. The entire Bananas for Bonanza archive is also waiting for you there, and you can access lots and lots of bonus content. So do that. Okay, thank you. Enjoy!
Yeah! Bonanza, it's the finest show alive. So consult your TV guide, get your great outdoors inside, take some Ponderosa pride, and forever may it ride. I'm Bananas for Bananas.
Unless anybody can think of a reason that we should not begin this episode of Bananas for Bonanza, I move that we begin this episode of Bananas for Bonanza.
Seconded.
Here it comes.
Seconded.
You ready? Seconded. Well, I'm starting
all
with it.
Favor.
Well, all in favor. All right.
All
well,
in favor.
If we're going to do it, let's do it. All in favor, say aye.
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 The motion carries, and we shall open this episode of Bananas for Bonanza with a customary yee-haw, but this time, unlike other times, I'm not giving any warning that it's coming. Here it comes. Yee-haw! Nice. Okay, Mutt Taylor, you just fired a bullet in the air. Whose name was on it this time, Mutt?
This time I did a little bit of a tribute, and I wrote the name of a one Jack Lord and shot it over the way of Hawaii, Mauna Loa to be exact, where it could melt into a volcano and ooze out as a molten magma and maybe find the ashy grave of that long-gone vagabond.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, indeed. That's Jack Lord. He's, you might know him from Hawaii 5-0, but he is a guest star in this episode of Bonanza. Not just any guest star. He's all over it, man. Oh, man, he's all over it. So that bullet was specially for Jack Lord down there in Hawaii, where he is, I believe, dead. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's the only assumption.
Yep. We believe he's dead in Hawaii. Okay, well, that is Mutt Taylor, and this is... Wait, let me say what I say here. Hello, friend. Come on in. The gate is open wide. Welcome to Bananas for Bonanza. I am your host, Dalton Wilcox, cowboy poet, poet laureate of the West, and the number one fan of the number one show in the history of television, Bonanza. And folks, we're ringing in 2021. You know, we're not recording it in 2021, but you're hearing it then. And we're ringing it in with a damn fine episode with some very special guests. Holy shit, I can't wait to tell you who's here. True friends of the show and of the Western lifestyle generally, and wonderful fellas are here. And we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 17, The Outcast, an episode in which a beautiful woman comes into the lives of our heroes and does not die. Unbelievable.
Wow.
It's incredible. She is not accidentally shot with a bullet that was meant for Adam or accidentally stabbed with a pitchfork that was meant for Joe.
It makes me think that maybe they made a mistake.
I wonder. This woman never one time coughs up blood into a handkerchief. Nothing bad. She doesn't get her skull crushed with a rock by a hoss like that bear, that beautiful lady bear in the last episode we watched. Nothing bad happens to her.
And she even makes money honestly through eggs.
Yes, yeah. She does.
That's yeah, she's true. A pioneer in selling her own eggs. I didn't know it went back that far.
And she can hold a shotgun just fine, too. That third voice you heard, in addition to mine and Mutt Taylor's, was that of Amy Slaverson, our other co-host on this show. Hi, Amy. Yes. How are you?
Hello. I'm very good. I'm very excited to promote my new payroll services for Christians. It's called Two Masters Payroll. We deliver payroll directly to you. But via gold nuggets, and it's automated tithing solution where we take 10% off the gross for you. So you don't even have to think about it.
What a great idea. So let's say I'm a businessman and I sign up with your payroll service because I want to, my employees are going to be paid through your payroll service. I send my money to you and you send it to my employees in the form of gold minus you also take out Social Security.
Minus the chunk of gold for, we send it to Jesus's tombs in the Holy Sepulchre Church in Jerusalem, which is there. We send it directly to Jesus.
That's a good idea. I don't know what everybody else is doing with all the collections from church. You're sending it straight to Jesus.
You know where Jesus is buried?
Right in Jerusalem. Well, a little outside. Wow. A little outside, yeah.
He couldn't get right in, huh?
Well, there is something to do with, it was, you know, whatever the rules of, you know, I don't know if they had the right licenses and permits.
Yeah, zoning, I think, is what it is. There was a big Christian versus, you know, Jewish zoning, I think, at the times.
It all comes down to zoning over there. Yep. In the Middle East, if they could just balance out the zoning board, it would all go down fine. But now,
Two Masters Payroll, we do it the way they did it in the 14th century, and that is all in gold and personal service.
Wow.
Personal service. Now, wait a minute. I just want to flag one thing. Did you say earlier Jesus' tombs plural? It sounded like you had said it.
Well, I didn't mean to, but maybe I did because I've been talking to teens a lot lately, and I add a Z to things. What?
I'm glad to hear you've been talking to teens lately. That's good.
With a Z, teens.
Teens with a Z. That's how they do it, these teens. And nobody knows how to spell anymore. Well, all right. This is exciting, folks. We've got, as I mentioned, a great episode, and we've got great guests here to talk about it. My goodness, you know, on every single episode of this show, we've got the guitarsman from the Journeymen on with us. That's Mutt Taylor. Well, today we is joined by the rest of the Journeymen. We got Cubby Lauterborn, and we got Shunt McGuppin, and we got Jimmy Blades. The Journeymen are all here. Hey, fellas.
Hey, boys.
Howdy.
Hello, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw is right. Let's go one at a time, find out what these fellas been up to. Hey there, Shunt McGuppin, how you been?
I've been doing quite well. How you been doing?
I've been doing great. Well, I've been up to my eyeballs in bonanza business every day. I just wake up here. You know, I'm living right now in I'm digging a house, me and my Russian bride. We live in a system of tunnels underneath a national park. And, that's, you know, every day it's dig, 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 bonanza, 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 fortify with a timber, just busy, busy, busy. And how about you? What's your life like these days, Shunt?
Well, these days, I mean, I have done that. I had an earth home. It was mostly tornado resistant till a tornado came and ripped it out of the side of the hill. I've just been making ketchup sandwiches and selling them out on the sidewalk. And then I'll autograph one of the slices of Wonder Bread that they come on, and people really seem to enjoy that. They ask me where my mask is, and I'm like, I'm not trying to rob you, so I don't know why they keep asking that, but it's a real hit with the kids.
Hell, I didn't know you was doing that, because I was making just mustard sandwiches up here. We ought to get together sometime.
We ought to get together and have a fusion show, a food fusion show.
You're right. We'll ask some of the wildlife critters to set up an audience and be an audience for us, and we'll do a fusion show.
Yeah, it'll be like Snow White had a reality show.
With Matchup and Custard.
Ketchup and custard, that's what you call the business.
That's right.
Are you autographing the bread with ketchup, I assume, out of a squirt bottle?
Well, now I'm glad you brought that up, because at first I was just using a Sharpie. And then people said, well, Shunt, I can't eat this. So I said, by God, you're right. And then I switched to one of those magic markers that smells like a blueberry.
Yeah.
And then after that, then I started using like ketchup and barbecue sauce.
Okay. Yeah. I hate to think of you sitting there trying to make your name legible with a Sharpie on a piece of Wonder Bread.
It's not easy. You got to soak and make a lot of awkward conversation while you're letting that letter soak. You're talking to, you know, and you find out a lot about people and you forget it real quick.
All right. Well, it sounds like things are going great for you. How about you, Cubby Lauterborn? What you up to? Where are you, man?
Where am I? I'm outside of the Winter Springs Mall on my break. I've been managing a Hickory Farms kiosk inside the mall.
I love Hickory Farms.
Everyone does. And because it's not a brick and mortar store inside the mall, it's actually one of them kiosks in the middle. Ain't nobody got to wear a mask.
It's meats you can touch.
It's open air. It is meats you can touch. I tell people that.
Well, you know, I don't mean to be in any way disparaging, but I can't tell the difference between Amy and Cubby. Your voices are the same register. It's incredible.
Oh, that's not true.
No, we never sound the same.
We never sound the same.
What are you talking about?
That's crazy.
I'm wild, man.
Yeah, but just the same, but when you speak, just say I'm Amy or I'm Cubby every time you speak. Doesn't have to be at the very beginning of the sentence. You could say it in the middle.
I just tell you can come on down and get some spreadable cheese snacks. You can get some meats. You can get some wine. We got gift baskets, Cubby.
Can I get me some summer sausage out there?
You can get summer sausage, autumn sausage. We got every season of the year.
That's fantastic. Now, you're telling me this is a mall. This mall is open for business.
Oh, yeah. But you got to wear a mask in the stores. You want to go to Foot Action USA, you got to wear a mask. not in the middle, though. It's open air.
Wow. I didn't know the malls had that policy. So, but it makes perfect sense because you're handing out free samples. How's somebody going to enjoy a free sample if they got a goddamn mask on their face?
Damn right, Dalton. This is Cuppy.
Thank you. That helps. And Jimmy Blades. What are you up to, Jimmy Blades?
Hi there, Dalton.
Wait a minute. Who's this?
Oh, no.
I was just kidding. And that's part of my one-man show there. It's called Cubby Meets Amy. And it's been performing for a few weeks now. I'm just glad to be back, Dalton. Thank you very much for having me.
We're delighted you're here. Thank you so much.
You know, the Journeymen have not been able to tour of late because of the awful pandemic. And so we've had to come up with other ways of making revenue, as you know.
Yeah.
And I had an idea that I've been following up on. You know how they got all these applications now on your phone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They call them apps, don't they?
Do they?
With a Z.
It was a Z. Right?
With
a
Z. Yeah. It's the young crowd likes that.
Yep.
And so I figured I'd invest in one of those. And they got all these relaxation ones, you know. They got Headspace. They got Calm.
Oh, yeah.
They got others. But I figure, well, there's too much relaxation going on.
Right.
I think people are getting complacent. There's no productivity anymore.
Okay.
So I came up with what I'm calling Dread Space. And it's going to introduce some anxiety back into people's lives. So basically, the app is just me. It's a recording of me describing Edward Munch paintings, things like that, that are going to give you the angst that you need to get going in the morning.
Did he do that fellow, the alien who's screaming surrounded by paint?
Well, I didn't know he was an alien. But yeah, I guess he is. It's kind of Roswell-esque, that painting.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have any proof that he's not an alien, he's probably an alien. This is Cubby.
Let's see. Okay. No, that wasn't good. Don't misidentify yourself, for heaven's sake. What? Yeah, I'm good. You're Amy, and I want to say Dalton. Yeah. All right. And so, Jimmy Blades, how's that going for you? People downloading the Dread Space?
I've gotten 7 downloads. I think five of them may have been my mother, but she was just the first one that I told about. She needed it because she couldn't get herself out of bed at all in the morning. So that's filled her with a lot of anxiety. And now she's running around crazy, but she's getting a lot done.
That sounds great to me because I agree with you. People are just, they become too relaxed. I don't know a single person that has put on a proper pair of pants in 9 months. It's just too much relaxation, right?
Exactly. Everyone's wearing improper pants.
That's right. Yeah. Closest I can do is put on chaps, but with no pants. So you can just kind of see my hips. You know how there's that like cutout spot?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of see my hips.
Are you pear-shaped?
I am, yes. But upside down pear.
Wonderful.
It's not like muscle. It's more like Eric Haas Cartwright.
Yeah, he's an upside down pair. You always stand with your feet exactly together. I've never seen you stand any other way. Just your
feet. On my tippy toes.
Yeah, on your tippy toes. Yeah, but what I do is I put on my tightest pair of jeans every damn day, and I have put on 40 pounds, and I don't care. I put on my tightest pair, and it is goddamn torture every day.
Where does that 40 pounds go once you squeeze it into the jeans?
You'd be surprised. It goes mostly into my arms and my hands.
Wow. Do you know that like 40 pounds of fat and just adipose tissue like that can start to get measured in water displacement like boats are? So these jeans are 40 pound fat displacement and it'll put you up into your armpits. So it looks like you have goiters that you're resting on.
Yeah, it's about like that. Yeah. People keep telling me you got to get them goiters looked at. That's when I pull out my. It's harder to keep a stake of wood down my pant leg like I like to do to take care of vampires, but I can get it in there. Well, folks, I'm glad we talked about pants, but now we got more serious business to talk about. We got to talk about this unbelievable episode of Bonanza. This is the 17th episode of the first season of Bonanza. It's called The Outcast. Now, what I like to do is I like to share some fun facts with you about the cast of this episode and whatnot. And I've done a little bit of that. I've done a little bit of research and looking into folks in this show. This show has a guest appearance by an actor by the name of Ed Platt.
Oh, yeah.
He is the poor man's Martin Balsam, I think is what they called him in the day.
And Martin Balsam's the poor man's Ernest Borgnine, so you're two levels deep.
Yeah, that's right. But he's Ed Platt. You probably know him from he was the chief on Get Smart. He was the chief of control there. But he was on a bunch of different things. He was on Bonanza three times as three different characters, which is not unusual.
Two of them in one episode.
One episode. He was on, you know, he was on all the big shows in the day, such as Telephone Time. And
what was that?
Telephone Time was, it was one of those anthology shows where it was, I believe it was every time you tuned in, it was a different play by a particular playwright I'd never heard of. But it was
about a telephone?
About a telephone. He was on the Schlitz Playhouse of Stars, which so many of these folks were on.
Yeah.
He played James Dean's understanding juvenile officer in Rebel Without a Cause. So that's pretty good. He was Cary Grant's lawyer in North by Northwest. And now I'd like to do a little thing. If y'all saw the episode, a little game. This is a new game we'll play called Guess the Age of the Character Actor. So how old would you say Ed Platt was in this episode of Bonanza?
Who'd he play? This is Cubby.
Oh, Cubby, he played Harvey Buford. He was the shopkeeper.
Oh, the foot fetish fella?
Yeah, the foot fetish shopkeeper.
That was 40.
Yeah. You say 40.
I feel like I should preface it first that he looks 58, but I'm going to say I'm going to say 42.
Okay.
This is Cubby, 22.
Well, that's a bold guess.
Price is Right style. I'm going low.
I see. Okay. All right. Yeah, these are
54.
Okay, you say 54.
This is Shun. I'm going to say 39.
39. Okay.
This is exciting.
This is exciting. Now, do we all agree that he looks to be about 58?
Yeah.
Does that feel about right?
Yeah.
All right. Ed Platt at the time that he shot this episode was 43 years old.
Wow.
Wow.
43 years old.
Wow.
That means, I believe, Mutt Taylor, you're the winner.
Oh, right? Man, I knew I should have gone on The Price is Right.
Yeah, you said 42. Yep, he was 43 and he looked 58. That's just how they did it in those days.
Yeah, that's
hurry up true. And get old. This episode also has Lita Malvin is played by a woman by the name of Susan Oliver, who she was in all the big shows at the time, the Kaiser Aluminum Hour. That's a real one.
I got every copy of those because Time Life was doing a thing where they'd sell you either the DVD or the VHS. And I says, mix it up week to week. But I got one copy of at least every episode on some kind of media.
Well, I looked it up. I was hoping it was an hour of talking about aluminum each week. But it's another one of these where they put on the 45-minute version of a play each week. It's a whole different show each week.
Yeah, and that's a spinoff of a British show called the Kaiser Aluminium Show.
They adapted it?
Yeah, like Three's Company and All in the Family.
Man About the House. I'm with you. She was, Susan Oliver was in an episode of Star Trek. She was in the pilot episode, which never aired. She was a space slave covered in green makeup doing a weird sexy dance. And she also, here's a fun one, she had a big part in The Disorderly Orderly as a suicidal mental patient who is so cheered up by Jerry Lewis's antics that her will to live is restored. So thank you, Jerry.
Wow.
Jerry wrote himself a part where his natural funniness can restore someone's will to live.
I think that was just a warm-up, wasn't it, to the day that the clown cried. He was just getting warmed up.
Yep. I was wondering if we could take a second to talk about the name of our show and if it could be called, be sponsored by one of my businesses.
Oh, absolutely. The name of Bananas for Bonanza?
Yeah, the Know Your Place Dating Service Theater. And where people are, no, you meet your kind.
Yeah.
You meet your kind. And I love other that. Kinds.
I can't believe nobody's had that idea before. The Know Your Place Dating Service.
Yeah.
You know, we could do that thing where they take a break in the middle and whoever the announcer is, maybe that's you, Emmy, or whatever, does that little a sponsored ad read for Know Your Place Theater.
Yeah. You meet, it's mostly people who are, cowgirls and recently imprisoned.
And not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Well, let me take it for a spin. Folks, welcome to the Know Your Place Dating Service Theater, where we talk about Bonanza.
Oh!
I think it works just fine.
This is Amy.
My name's Mutt Taylor, and I simply did not know my place. And then when I used Know Your Place Dating Service Theater, I found out I was on a date and in the theater. Thanks, Know Your Place Dating Place Theater.
I met people who were more my kind.
That's right. This is specifically not for ladies that is putting on airs or trying to be like the Cartwrights. This is for them to know their place.
This is not for ladies that survive an episode of Bonanza.
Hell no. I think that's great.
The only way you can afford shoes is to prostitute yourself. You want to go to Know Your Place Dating Service.
Yeah, and those were good shoes, too. Okay, I think it's a great service. Last thing I want to say about Susan Oliver is that her final screen role was in 1988 on a show called Freddy's Nightmares, which was an anthology series hosted by Freddy Krueger.
Oh, sure. That's right. I've been hearing a lot about that lately. And we've talked about Freddy Krueger and how you'd kill one and such. Wow. Well, she's been right there in the shadow of it.
You know, the other thing about Susan Oliver is that she was quite an aviatrix.
Yeah,
she became a big aviator. She flew. She was the fourth to fly across the transatlantic trench solo.
She took the trench route.
Is the transatlantic trench just the ocean?
It's a part of it, yeah.
Okay. How did you know all that?
Well, it's in the wiki. Oh, at the Wikipedia, they got it. And she was also a director, a female director, which when it was rare. Yeah. And she flew, got her pilot's license, and flew for quite a while. She was very there was a documentary made about her called The Green Girl, I believe.
Wow. That's just smart flying. Let Amelia Earhart go first, see if it works. Turns out it doesn't. Then you got to fix a few bugs, and then go for it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Quite a lady.
Quite a lady. Speaking of quite a lady, Irene Tedrow played Mrs. Buford, and she has a very severe face, I think it's fair to say. She's got she's a stern-looking woman. And so I looked at some of the other character names that she played over the years. On Little House on the Prairie, she played a character named Minerva Farnsworth. On Columbo, she played a character named Mrs. Charles Wart. On the Schlitz Playhouse of Stars,
God damn,
she played a character named Marion Vanderlip.
Are you sure you're not looking at Know Your Place Dating Service right now? This is Cubby.
Marion Vanderlip, I never even RV'd her smile. This is Cubby.
It's a good name. She played on something else. She was a Mrs. Ambrose Tutwiller. She played a character named Mrs. Grimhouse. Grimhaus.
Wow.
And then, so she was allowed to supply her own character names.
I guess so.
Can we play Guess Her Age in this episode?
Oh, we could do. Damn it. We should do that. All right. I'm going to look it up. But I also want to tell you that the last character name I wrote down was Minerva Todd, which means that this is a woman who in her career played two Minervas.
Wow. That's a great Wallflowers song. I may be the only one here that appreciates.
I understand, because we had a two Minerva solo on one of our albums.
That's right.
We had dueling Minervas.
Okay, let's see here. This is going to require just a little bit of math. Okay, I've got it. All right, guess the age of Irene Tedrow at the time that she played the Widow Buford, or the Mrs. Buford who becomes the Widow Buford in
40.
This episode. You say 40. Okay. Amy says 40.
I'll say 45.
45. Okay.
This is Cubby, 24.
Oh, man. All right.
I got burned before, but I'm going to say 50.
Okay. Well,
who's Jeremy, by the way, first of all?
Yeah, who is Jeremy?
Oh, shut. You're not in. I'm not looking at my screen.
I'm going to say 47 just because the women seem to age better than the men.
Uh-huh. That's fair. Well, Irene Tedrow was born in 1907, so she'd have been 52 at the time this episode was made.
Wow. Okay.
How old would you say she looks in this episode? Is that rude to say? I think she looks older than that.
She's no Ed Platt, but I'd put her in her mid to late 50s.
Yeah, I'd say. Hurry up, get old, Irene. The good parts are out there for stern librarians and widows. And then finally.
I'm not old enough to be in show business.
That's the problem. That is the problem.
This is Cubby.
Thank you.
Ladies, don't even try to get into show business until your face looks leathery. Gotta wait. All right. The last guest star on this episode was a fellow by the name of Jack Lord.
Ooh, wow.
Good heavens. Jack Lord was the star of Hawaii Five-0, which was somehow on the air for 12 years and only managed to make a paltry 279 episodes. What were they doing down there?
Jeez.
Fooling around.
That's he what it's played like in tropical climates. They can't get themselves to do anything.
I'd say.
Yeah. Maybe my app would help.
Yeah, they should have had your app down there.
Was that Cubby?
Might have been. If they had woke up every day to a dose of Dread Space, would have had Jack Lord say, "Guys, we got to make an episode of Hawaii Five-0 today. What are we doing? Get off your surfboards, gentlemen."
That's right. Hey, about 60 years too late.
Oops. He was Felix Leiter, the first Felix Leiter in Dr. No. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew something about that. I got this friend that's really into James Bond. But I can tell you a thing. Now, he was known, apparently, for wanting to supply some of his own costume and wardrobe.
Oh, and really?
That explains why, as Felix Leiter, he is, I shit you not, wearing ladies' cat's eye sunglasses.
Well, how interesting. He's a he plays a CIA agent. Yeah. Isn't that correct? And he's wearing ladies' glasses. All right. Well, interesting. All right. That was Jack Lord. Now, I understand that Jack Lord, despite being dead, made an appearance recently on the new Hawaii Five-O. Is that right?
That's correct. My understanding is it was going to be the season finale, or series finale, I think. And I'm not sure they used it because they had to put him in computer graphically because he'd been long dead.
Right. And did you say, is there a video clip of that?
There is. Now, I'm going to play it for you to show you what the technology was like at the time, which is virtually non-existent here.
What year was it?
That's a good question. I'll look into that. You'll notice that the video's really dark, and I think that's clearly on purpose because they knew what they had there, and it wasn't much. Okay, I got this pulled up. You see it?
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Sorry, I didn't realize anyone was in here.
That's all right.
Hey, I can leave.
No, it's okay. I can use the company.
Okay.
What in the world?
You notice they don't stay on him too long.
No, they don't.
I'm sorry to hear that.
She beat cancer a few years back and put up with me for 45 years. So this should be a walk in the park.
It's real weird that we're not seeing him for any of this speech. Oh, no.
He looks like one of the Thunderbirds.
That is bizarre.
Work-related injury.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like he's having a conversation with a Disneyland.
It's Abe Lincoln.
5-0 Task Force.
That is disastrous. Wow. What?
I was a cop, too.
Oh, my God.
Long time ago.
The less he moves, the better it is.
That's for sure.
You were a cop, and you've been married for 45 years? What's your secret?
He kind of looks like Charlie McCarthy, the ventriloquist figure.
I just met the right gal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
This is called faith-based watching.
What about you? You married?
Where you just, you have to believe. No.
All right, I think I can't take any more of that.
Yeah, I understand.
It looks like he looks like a video game zombie, is what I would say.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I agree.
You're playing a video game, you encounter a zombie, looks like Jack Lord in Hawaii Five-0, the new one.
So are we going to play the game of how many years dead is he when this was filmed?
How much goes to his pension plan if it's his dead percentage being showed in a movie? I don't know how to do the calculations. I gotta learn.
I did mention this earlier, but the true story is his estate is owned by a bank, and they had to approach the bank for permission to do this, and they said, hell yes, we have no emotional connection to this man, and we're in the business of making money. Take him and more.
Yeah, his estate is owned by a bank. How, I don't know how that ends up happening. Was he, did he die and hock to a bank, I guess?
I don't know, but you know that jazz saxophonist Paul Desmond, he didn't have any heirs, so he willed all his royalties to the Red Cross. So to this day, if you stream Paul Desmond on Spotify, that money's going to charity.
Oh, really?
Isn't that nice?
That is nice. I think
I'm single-handedly keeping that charity and business too.
I get you. I haven't heard of that artist.
Well, good for Jack Lord then, giving some money finally to the banks.
We ought to send that bank a Hickory Farms sympathy gift basket. We could send them a signature flavors basket, a favorite flavors basket, a give back gift box, a classic chocolates gift set. This is Cubby.
Cubby, do you have anything like a special occasions gift basket for someone who dies of gun violence within their own home?
Oh, yeah, we could send you a honey gold spiral sliced ham.
Oh, because I kind of hope to get into that market.
Yeah, come
wait,
on
what
down
market
to the
exactly?
Winter Springs Mall. I'll help you out.
Okay.
You're the market of sending food to the survivors of someone who has perished from gun violence in their own home. That's the market you're hoping to get into?
It's going up 27% every year.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it that's certainly... just by suicide.
Oh, okay. Well, then that is a growth market. That's what they call a growth market.
So if people, if she weren't a fictional character, I'd send one of these baskets to the Widow Buford.
Oh, yeah.
She could use it.
Yeah.
Poor
Widow Buford. Her husband died at the, well, I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to get into it. We're going to go scene by scene for this episode of Bonanza, and this is a good time to take a break. We're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, we're going to go scene by scene, season one, episode 17, The Outcast. Anybody else have any other business before we take a break?
Just okay. To say this is the Know Your Place theater.
Oh, yeah.
Know Your Place dating service theater.
Exactly. All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome back to the Know Your Place Dating Service Theater, where we're talking about Bonanza, Season 1, Episode 17, The Outcast. This episode starts out real strong with some really, really lively music. This music is not subtle about the fact that there's danger in Virginia City as our heroes ride in quick on their horses. The town seems to be deserted. There's nobody there. They check the jail. There's nobody there. And then they ride on to where there's a big mob. And basically what's happening is they're hanging a couple of guys. We only get to see their feet, but we can guess that the rest of them is hanging from nooses. And there's a woman who's real sad about it, and Ben is on her side. I think that's basically what we learned in that first scene there. And this woman, well, it's her brother and her father who've been hung by the angry mob in Virginia City. And then we go up to the...
Did you notice that when Lita, the young lady, is going there and Ben wants to protect her, he has Little Joe basically wrestle her to the ground, dislocating a shoulder to protect her from seeing the sight.
Oh, yeah. She shouldn't see this. And so Little Joe just like manhandles her
to the ground. Yeah. I thought was brave.
There were a lot of rugby moves in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Well,
the Cartwrights always take the moral high ground.
Yeah.
They sure do, even if it means getting down and dirty in the dirt.
Yeah.
Well, then we have the opening credits where this turns out to be the 17th episode with the burning map in the opening credits, 17th episode of Bonanza, and the first episode of Bonanza that then cuts to a chapter title card at the end of the credits.
Oh.
I believe this will be a fixture from here forward, but it only happens for the first time in this episode.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Historically significant. And then we go to the Ponderosa Ranch House. Now, our heroes, the Cartwrights, have brought this woman, Lita Malvet, who's lost her father and her brother. They brought her to the Ponderosa to kind of recuperate from the shock of having the crap beat out of her by Little Joe.
She had to lie down therapy.
Yeah. And the doctor is there. We've seen this doctor before, but I've never quite noticed how slim his medical bag is before.
He didn't have to do much. I think one of the things he says there is the only other thing I can prescribe is time, which must have been nice, you know, being a doctor back then when all you had to do was prescribe the inevitable.
Yeah, all he's got in that medical bag is a watch.
Don't Maybe worry. I could it's be a doctor. Depressor. I could be a doctor of the wait and see school.
Don't worry. She'll be able to act again in 50 years when her face is all leathery.
He did have another thing in there. He had that tiny bottle of cocaine. So
oh, yeah.
Here, give her this. No, he doesn't tell him what it is or how often. He's just like, eh.
You're right.
Is it a suppository? Do you take it orally? What do you do with it?
He hands Ben a little glass tube and says, give her this. I don't know. Yeah.
See if she figures it out.
Is it topical? Is it internal?
It's a tavern puzzle.
Yeah.
I love puzzles.
Oh, boy. Me too. Puzzles are the best. Well, then you get... the next scene has Little Joe firing off a whole bunch of bullets with no warning about 10 feet away from his brother. It's
and that horse,
reckless.
Chub the horse.
And Chub the horse, yeah, freaking out horses. That's a crazy thing to do.
I got a question about Hoss. I woke up in the middle of the night with the sweats, and I need you guys to answer something for me.
Oh, boy.
Did you have the Hoss sweats?
I did. Something awful. So bad I couldn't sit down. Let me tell you, I thought about this. His nickname's Hoss, right?
Right.
We know that to be H-O-S-S. We know his first name's Eric.
Yeah.
Is Hoss just deep Southern gentleman dialect for horse? I was riding my hoss.
I believe that is the case. I've always assumed.
Yeah. I never knew that.
Oh, I always assumed that they're calling him horse in a Western style.
Shit.
As strong as
yeah.
a hoss. As strong as a hoss.
You've just blown my mind.
Yeah.
I thought it was some kind of term that they came up for somebody. It was a boss man.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a horse boss.
Or a honcho and a boss portmanteaued together.
Like could Hoss Skaggs?
Yeah, or it could have been a boncho.
These days.
I thought it was short for Hoss and Pfeffer.
Cook.
That's right.
Yep. No, I believe what they're saying is you are as big as strong and as dumb as a horse.
And as lucky in love.
Yeah. Oh, man. Sad. Well, then up rides Clay Renton, and that's our Jack Lord. And nobody seems to like him very much. And, but he wants to go in and talk to Lita, and and ultimately it's Hoss who says, you might do her some good, can't do her any bad. So they let him in and talk to her.
That was pretty good.
Well, thanks. I'm working on my Hoss. And she's thrilled to see him. And he's kind of like, it's you and me against the world type of vibe from him on there. And then after he leaves, it turns out he and Joe have had some good times together in the past, they say. I don't know why is that element in our story? I do not know. But Clay,
I think it was to juxtapose that they're the same age.
Oh.
And that Little Joe has lived a clean life.
Oh, there
and,
you go.
And Mr. Renton has lived, he's got some prison ahead of him, we understand.
Two prison terms.
He's been to jail two times already.
Two prison terms.
Yeah, two prison terms.
Which is sometimes a real benefit when you're looking to meet someone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Prison.
Yeah, you've got time in your hands and you're going back to school and you're not accumulating debt.
Oh yeah. I'm always very impressed whenever I hear that somebody has met a woman and got married while being in jail. I think that is wonderful.
Shot's done it a couple times.
Who's done it?
Shunt.
Oh, Shunt, have you had been married in jail a few times?
Well, yeah, it was the same woman twice.
Oh, okay. You had one of those Liz Taylor, Richard Burton type
of...
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Did you know she was your kind?
I did. I knew the second she tried to sneak in some sort of paraphernalia, not unlike what the doctor handed Ben bag.
Did you know what to do with it, or did they just throw it on the floor and say, knock yourself out?
I tried a variety of options.
So Shunt, the judge prescribed you time as well.
Yeah.
Hard time.
Only thing I can think
it's
is
the
time.
Hardest kind.
Well, so old Ben Cartwright has a piece of wisdom in this scene. He says, a man can't tell a woman who to love. Oh, isn't that true?
Yeah.
Would be good if we could, though. It seems unfair that we can't.
Yeah, Amy, is that right? A man can't?
I didn't want to bring it up this early, but I was just going to... I've never told you about my husband and how we met.
Oh, no, you haven't.
My husband, he's a sapient, very articulate man of many pieces. He's a Frankenstein.
Oh, I beg your pardon?
What?
I beg your pardon?
We had a dear friend in common named Vic, and he said, oh, I got this friend, and, you know... I haven't been able to make a woman for him. Would you want to be that gal?
Good heavens.
And so my husband's a Frankenstein.
Good Lord. What? This is shocking information. You're telling me that your husband has been stitched together from multiple corpses?
Yes.
Good Lord.
Does he got bolts in his neck and everything?
Yes. Vic is an alchemist. He does a good job. He brought him to life and then...
I can't believe this. Your husband's a Frankenstein. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but I'm honor bound to chase him into the sea with a flaming torch.
That's what I was worried about. That's why I didn't want you guys to meet.
Oh, well... you should prevent us from meeting until you're fully tired of him, because I have killed many a Frankenstein in my time. I'll tell you that right now. I'm not supposed to talk about it on this podcast. I made a solemn vow to Earwolf that I will not talk about my monster slaughtering, and I never have, even the one time on this podcast. And I'm not doing it now neither, but I've killed dozens of hundreds of Frankensteins in my time. And I will not hesitate to take care of your husband.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll slap you in the face so hard you won't have seen that coming.
Man, oh man, this is shocking. Hoo-wee. Well, I'll try to persevere in the rest of this episode, knowing as I do now that your husband is a freak of science. And it sounds like this fellow was trying to make him a bride, but it didn't work out, and so he ended up marrying you.
Well,
you're the new bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Well, he knew it was evil to that he shouldn't have machinated flesh, and then he but it was too late. It was too late.
Right.
And then he was so lonely, and he was making so much noise in the basement. And he says, Amy, I have someone. You, I think you guys would get along, and we do.
Well, so, it is true. I mean, that's part of what stings so bad is you guys have a wonderful relationship. Everything I've heard about your relationship just sounds fantastic. So it stings.
But I think I can change your mind about Frankenstein's because I started a new reputation rebuilder service. It's called The Suppressor. And for $7,500, I can go to your small town and change people's minds about you. Not just on the internet, but in public, I tell people, you know, that Frankensteins are good and not evil. And I started that based on my marriage to my husband, where it's like everyone assumes all this stuff about him. And some of it's true, but there's no need. That should be the first thing you read when you do a search engine.
Well, man, oh, man, you got your work cut out for you if you're going to try and persuade people Frankenstein's is good. That's not going to be easy. Unbelievable.
Amy, I was wondering if I could hire you for that service, because I have been doing this one thing up around these Ponderosa parts where I put on those lumberjack spike shoes that you can climb trees real quick with, and I've been climbing up Ponderosa pines wearing nothing but them spike shoes and white briefs, and people have been calling me the chupacabra of the Ponderosa, and I do wish I could have that kind of wiped clean.
Well, I gotta tell you, that happened with me with my business, Lot's Daughters. I had been sending out candles with the blood of Christ in them in God-driven packaging that it came through me. You know, it wasn't really my packaging. Yeah. It was stuff. Anyways, I had to go, you know, make sure that rewrite 25 new bios about myself online so that people, you know, would still go to my business. So I can do that.
Okay. We'll talk later.
Okay.
25 bios, man. Well, all right. Sounds like you guys have a project on your hands. Okay. Are those the kind of shoes that got spikes on the toes? Is that how they work?
Yeah, and the insides.
Yeah, okay.
So you climb it kind of like a monkey would, but then just imagine a real white guy in just white briefs and just those spike shoes scurrying up real quick. You get up real quick.
Yeah, that sounds disturbing. All right, but back to this episode now. What we basically learn here, what we find out, Clay Renton is part of a gang of bad guys led by a fellow named Spence, and they have been trying to rob the stagecoach, thinking that the payroll for everybody that works on the Ponderosa, all those people we'd never have met before, 17 episodes, the payroll for all those guys must be coming in on the stagecoach. And so they've been trying to rob that stagecoach and get all that money. And in the process, that's why it was Lita's husband and father, brother and father, that shot two innocent people on a failed attempt to rob the stagecoach. And that's why they ended up getting hung. These are all a bunch of things we've learned. And we also learned that Lita, she's not involved in any crime. She doesn't benefit from it at all. She makes her living by selling the eggs that her chickens spit out. And that's all she's ever been doing. And Ben Cartwright takes her home. What happens there? Ben Cartwright takes her home and Clay's waiting for her at home. And here's where I want to get to. I'm going to show a clip now where we got Lita. She gets herself all gussied up to bring her eggs into Harvey Buford's store. I guess it's a dry goods store. And sells her eggs. And then we have a scene here where Mr. Buford is just, he's a married man, but he's looking for love.
Well, she is selling her eggs.
She is selling her eggs. And she did get herself all dressed up. And I think it's fair to say he's got a thing for feet. Okay, ready? Here we go. And this is Chief from Get Smart. Here, putting the moves on Lita Malvet. Let's see what my volume is like. Too loud? Sounds all right to me. Sounds all right to you? Mm-hmm. He made sure his customers have left. The store is empty. He approaches with his hands on his vest. He smooths out the front of his pants.
And how old is he again here? 40, what?
He's 43. Look at him.
Jesus Christ.
Unbelievable.
He's been rode hard and put away old.
I can't tell by his voice if he's ever smoked cigarettes.
Do you mean if he's ever not smoked cigarettes?
He is about as close as you can get to a human being. And now here he is.
Your size, too.
He's down by her feet with a pair of leather shoes.
For the eggs now.
Oh, I didn't mean nothing by looking up your dress.
Yeah.
I can't afford them. If you'll give me the pay, Mr. Buford.
She can't afford those shoes. Look what he does. He puts the shoes in the egg basket and covers them over.
You got a pair of shoes,
Lee? Yeah.
I told you I couldn't afford them.
I just want to be nice and friendly.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. I could come out to your cabin of an evening once in a while and pick up the eggs.
And if... Oh! That was a hell of a slap. And in walks Clay Renton.
That's why I don't do door-to-door sales anymore.
Absolutely not. Yeah. So she just went in there to sell her eggs as per usual. Next thing she knows, he's fitting her for a fancy pair of leather shoes and he wants to come by her cabin. Now that her father and brother is dead, he figures she's there all alone. I can get some sex business.
Yeah, some eggs.
Right?
Yeah, sex business. What, it's hard to see the chief be bad.
It is hard. I feel like if Maxwell Smart knew about this man's past, it would change his attitude toward risking his life. Yeah,
what would Jaime the robot say?
Hard to imagine.
It's also hard to know. It's hard to know if it's pronounced Buford or Buford. This is coming.
It does seem to change, doesn't it?
Sure does. Whichever way the wind's blowing, that's what we're calling them.
Well, the liquid U had just been invented.
Yeah, the solid U had been around since the early 1800s.
But back then, a liquid U meant that it could change. It was liquid. It could go from liquid to non-liquid.
They were vowel liquid.
And we hadn't yet encountered the gaseous U.
What does that sound like? What's the gaseous U say? Oh, okay.
That was Mutt.
I've heard that a few times. Yeah. Well, what are you supposed to do? You got a character whose name is spelled B-U-F-O-R-D. You supposed to tell the whole cast one way to say it? Give me a break. Well, now we find out. Yeah, it's a real problem for these Cartwrights to get their $50,000 in payroll for invisible employees onto the Ponderosa. And one way they've been doing it is they've been sneaking it in, buried under a pile of wood. Pretty clever. And then we have a scene here. I'm gonna just go right in and show you another clip. This is now the bad guys they're camped out somewhere on the Ponderosa, trying to figure out how they're going to get their hands on that payroll. And they have a scene here, and the main bad guy, a fellow by the name of Spence, has some beef with Clay. Clay wants to be the new bad. And they had a little altercation in the previous scene. And one of the things we learned from that scene was, it's not smart to try to draw your gun on Spence, because I guess Spence is a fast hand with a gun.
Spence does look a lot like one of the fellers doing mall security at the Winter Springs Mall, I might say.
Oh, he does?
He doesn't look too intimidating to me, is what I'm saying.
He has a mall security body.
He looks like a dinner roll face.
He's got the face of a dinner roll.
Yeah, somehow his head is just pear-shaped.
Yeah. He also,
I'm just
by the
saying,
way,
if you got a feller in your show that you don't want to outdraw, he might need to look like you can outdraw him.
Well, that's why he's so successful, because everybody thinks, I can take my time with this city slicker.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
By the way, this actor is another Bonanza three-timer. This is the first of three appearances on Bonanza for this guy, too.
Good for him.
Maybe they found more fitting roles for him later on. But all right, here we go. This is a showdown between Clay and Spence, both bad guys. Sharing my screen. Here we go. And it's an interesting shootout that occurs here. Let's take a look.
I don't want no part of a cheap two-bit holdup. I came here after big money, and that's what I'm going to get.
I told you before.
Yeah, you didn't look too
small.
You think too small.
You've been living on egg money too long.
He's got the posture of a question mark.
Looks like he got the draw on him.
Time, Spence.
Yep, he turned his back on Clay, and Clay pulled his gun.
First time in history.
Grew up to man size.
And Clay shoots him right in the belt.
No.
And then in the foot.
Yeah.
And he's dead.
Wow. Here's my question.
Yep.
Does the tactic of taunting a man pointing a gun at you ever work? Does that ever shame them out of it, or does it just make them want to kill you?
I believe Shunt can speak to that.
I'd say I've seen it 50-50.
Oh, I see. It's got
it works 50%.
50%.
50% of the time you can shame them out of it. The other 50% of the time you're just going to egg them on.
Yeah, what he basically says is, what are you going to do with that gun you got aimed at me, little boy?
You ain't got no bullets in that. Prove it.
Yeah, it would take a man to shoot me. What are you?
And I'll give you $100 if you shoot me.
And keep in mind, the scene before, he had slapped Clay. So it's like he is harboring all kinds of stuff. And he's just like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. But I will say, the argument they're having, I think I might take Spence's side on it, because Renton's plan is that in order to take down the transport of the payroll, they need money. They need new horses. So they're going to commit one robbery to buy new horses to commit the second robbery.
Couldn't they just feed their own horses, get them back healthy again, and use those?
That's the problem. Spence says, we can't go after the payroll. Our horses are hungry. And Clay says, well, we'll get new horses.
This plan could take years.
Yeah. That shocked me right there, because it didn't look like Spence had been sacrificing any meals. which led me to think, well, what if you were planning this to be out there for 6 months, if you have to be, like he said at one point, really? Well, then you didn't plan to bring food along for the horses. You just figured you'd be a bunch of starving fellows on starving horses trying to hold up healthy men with a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I'm confused. When you guys are saying horses, do you mean hosses?
Oh, I think in this case it's actual like four-legged horses.
I don't get the rules.
It is hard.
They aren't riding hoss and pfeffers.
Yeah. This is the liquid R.
Okay.
Is what.
So when you're building a construction site and you use a saw hoss.
Brother.
What?
I suppose so.
Okay. We're getting in the weeds.
And way deep in the weeds.
Sorry.
But I did think it was interesting in that scene. It's one of these times, this happened on the show before, where somebody gets shot, but they didn't tell the actor, like, what part of your body you can grab onto when you're shot. Remember the time we had a Native American people's person who was shot, and the bullet wound went from the back of the hand to the forearm. He was just, ow, ow. Like, I'm not quite sure where the bullet hit me.
Well, and what are they supposed to do? Tell every actor where they got shot?
No,
yeah. There's no time for that.
There's no time for it. But he appears to have been shot in the belt. And then the second shot is Jack Lord is just clearly aiming toward the ground.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
I think that's like, I'm going to shoot you, and here's one in the ground for when you fall. So you're going to.
Well, both of his shots, really. I mean, they were both gun safety.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So he aimed way over here, and Spence is that way. And then he shoots down like, okay, they want another shot. And they also don't fully commit to it.
Like, yeah, and it's never, let me tell you, previously on Bonanza, never been a problem to aim a gun and shoot it right at someone's torso.
Right. Maybe this time, maybe, you know how it's on a set, the prop guy will come up and say, okay, I'm going to show you now. There's no real bullets in here. This is not a real gun. Maybe on this particular day, the prop guy came up and said, look, no promises.
I don't have any blanks. I only got real bullets. Will you just aim it about 5 inches that way? We'll set up a mattress on the far side of the set.
Something like that. Well, Dalton, okay.
Yep. Dalton, are we just going to breeze right by the Cartwright's plan to dress as women on a cart to get the payroll through?
I was hoping we'd
see that the end of the episode. We never do. Boy, they overpromise and underdeliver. This is Cubby.
I know. And they had a dressmaker in the episode, too. It would have been so easy. What were you going to say something about that, Amy?
Well, just that with the dressmaking, you think she could make money doing that more than eggs.
You would think. That's true. She has an entirely egg-based income. Yeah,
I mean, that's what I do. I like to have multiple streams of income so that, you know, if something dries up.
She should make little dresses for the eggs and sell the eggs in little dresses.
That's a nice
egg idea. Dresses.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful idea.
Yeah. I'm going to get on that.
Yeah, so it has developed in these over these 17 episodes that Hoss and Little Joe is kind of a comedy duo. They have it's lots of funny stuff happens between them, and so when they're talking about Joe's teasing Hoss, saying that they're, from now on they're going to sneak the payroll onto the ranch by dressing up Hoss like a woman, and Hoss gets all bothered. So that's just some of their good times and fun laughter.
As good of a plan as burying it under a bunch of logs.
Yeah. No one would think to look under some wood. Well, now, what do we have here? Well, okay, Clay proposes marriage to Lita then, so she's going to get married. And then Hoss drops by, and she's all excited. She's made a wedding dress, and Hoss says, something to put in your hope chest, which is a little bit insulting, isn't it? If somebody says to you, hey, I've made myself a wedding dress, and you say, oh, just to put in a box for some future time?
Put in a time capsule?
Are you going to put that in a time capsule?
Nice vision board, Ugmo.
Your body won't change at all from the time you made the dress until the point where you actually marry somebody.
Yeah. But what he didn't want to hear is the truth. She is planning to marry that Clay Renton, and he is bad news. And he makes no effort to hide his disappointment at this news. He doesn't even say, well, good for you. Are you sure? He's just flat out just, getting married to that jerk. Rude. But she's happy. She starts dancing around her house with her wedding dress, singing a nonsense tune. And
those are free.
No, nonsense tunes are
royalty-free nonsense.
Royalty-free nonsense.
Well, I would say just about any song that character would know would be free, but she instead sings ba da dee da ba ba zoo da dee ba dee.
Hey, on that burning map that we see at the top of the show?
Yes, yes.
How many churches are there in Virginia City? Because it seems to me she wants to get married in the best church in Virginia City, which would beg the question, how many are there?
And are we all in agreement about which one's best?
Well, there's a street in Virginia City called Church Row, and it's just 18 churches in a row. And you can do like a pub crawl, but for churches where you get drunk and
crazy. Do they have like a Yelp review of which one's the best?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's the third one.
Have you guys heard about live action role play and ever thought about how we could act out these episodes ourselves?
Oh man. Live action role. Is that what LARP stands for? I've heard of LARP.
Yeah. I called dibs on Lita.
I don't even know who to call dibs on. They're all so great.
I want to be Adam because I've been working on my smug look.
Okay.
How big are your teeth? Because he's got tiny teeth.
I've had them in Smalland.
I want to be a chicken so I can be held by Hoss.
The food court at the Winter Springs Mall looks exactly like a charity bazaar.
Yeah, it does.
We can do it right there in the mall.
Oh, man. I gotta be Paul Wainwright. Cartwright. I gotta be Ben Cartwright. Or Wainwright. Cartwright.
I want to be Mrs. Buford.
Yeah.
Or Beaufort.
Bufford.
Buckward.
Actually, I want to be Buford because he's such a young man.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great idea, Amy. I'd love to do some LARPing, get together and do some bonanza LARPing.
Yeah, I'll get it organized and start making bars.
Okay, yeah, set up a sign-up genius, and we'll we'll all know what to bring. All right, so now what else? Okay, yeah, Virginia City's having a charity bazaar. Not clear what that is, but then... what happens? Okay, couple of important things. This is when Clay and the boys are going to rob. They're going to break into the safe of Buford's store. And it turns out there's only $50 in there. And I don't know how did this go wrong? I can't even imagine. But anyway, there's only $50 in the safe, and that's disappointing. And is this okay? And then that's when Buford walks in. He happens to walk into his store. And Clay pistol whips him, and that's that scene. And then we see So the bad guys are having a hard time. Now, Lita shows up. She's a little bit late for the dressmaking contest at the Charity Bazaar because Clay was going to bring her into town, but he didn't show up. She doesn't know why. So she got there on her own power. She shows up a little bit late, but boy, Mrs. Buford doesn't want to see her one bit. Mrs. Buford seems to believe she's just as guilty as her hung menfolk. She don't like her one bit, and she ignores her. And then this was quite a moment. Maybe I should have had the clip ready, but I don't. But she goes, look, I made a wedding dress. It's my wedding dress I'm going to wear when I get married. I'm putting it in the dress competition. And Mrs. Buford just pushes it onto the ground, onto the dirty ground. You ever see anything so hostile in your life?
Wow. Sometimes when I do trade shows.
People, you see that kind of thing when you do trade? What do you bring to a trade show?
I just bring in some of my new things like family gun holsters or just any product that, Bibles, my own Bibles that I've written myself, a rewrite so a woman right. can understand it, And, sometimes they push off. They physically push me away.
Oh, man. Well, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I'm sorry to hear that it happened. It's that the kind of thing goes on in our civilized world.
All the time in crafting.
Oh, the crafting world. Cutthroat.
Do we also learn that Ben Cartwright judged last year's dressmaking competition?
Sure did. Yes.
Who was that?
Amy.
Okay. Yep. That's true.
And he does not want to repeat. He does not want to repeat that experience because it was so awful.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Those bitches take it too seriously.
that is what he said. I'm not sure if those were the words, but I think that was the message. Yeah. Good point. He does not want to judge the dress competition. And I think basically from what I understand, the competition last year sounds like it was Haas put on each one of these dresses, and then Ben had to decide which one looked best on Haas.
I think that is what happened, and he had to wear a fake false beard as well.
Yeah.
It was very confusing.
Oh, yeah, false beard. They talk about that, too. Well, then, okay, now Buford, Harvey Buford, stumbles out of his store with, it looks like a Halloween store scab glued onto his head.
Yeah, like, did you bump into some rhubarb? What happened?
But it turned
Mr.
out...
Mr. Gorbachev.
He got jelly on his forehead. But it's fatal jelly. He is... it turns out he will succumb to that injury. But before he dies, he says it was Clay Renton what did this to my head. And Ben organizes a posse right there on the spot, but he sends them intentionally on a bit of a goose chase. He knowingly sends the angry mob to some place where he doesn't think they're going to find Clay Renton, because this is another one of them times where the Cartwrights alone want to bring somebody in alive and have them stand trial, and the whole rest of the rabble just wants to string them up. They talk a lot about getting your neck stretched in this episode. I'm getting my neck stretched for that. They don't seem to understand. That's not what happens when you get hung, by the way. It is not a neck stretching. The point is, the neck doesn't stretch. If the neck stretched, you'd have no problems. In a minute, your feet would be on the ground.
Yeah, it's a pants shitter. That's what I understand happens when you get hanged.
Yeah, that's right. That's wishful thinking. My neck is going to stretch. Well, let's see here.
Yeah. Do you think, if you don't mind my asking, do you think the Cartwrights might make all of their money really from anytime there's a criminal in town, they go, look up by the lake, and they send everybody off so that they can bring them in and collect the money?
It's a bounty hunter operation.
Yeah.
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 They wouldn't do that because they're godlike.
That's true.
They are godlike. That's true. They are the only principled people in the entire American West.
I'm just saying they could be Greek godlike.
Oh, I see. So sometimes principled and other times committing all kinds of rapes. Like the Greek gods. Like the Greek gods. Well, so Clay now. The Cartwright boys run into Clay's gang, minus Clay. So that's all taken care of. Those other fellas that's part of it has all been captured very easily. And then Clay goes to Lita's house, which I think is where Adam and Ben figure he's going to go. And Ben says, I'm going to go meet him there. And Clay is in there talking to Lita, and then he hides in a bedroom. And what? And Ben, does Ben come in? No, Ben doesn't come.
Yeah, they have Ben a long, goes in.
He does he well, go in that scene?
Ben finds a horse that's been ejaculated on, so he knows that Clay is inside.
Oh, that's right. Oh, Ben goes inside and he's looking for Clay, and Lita says he ain't here, and she gives a very convincing performance that Clay is not hiding on the other side of that door, and she is just all in for defending her husband, and she sends Ben out the door.
She says, my husband is not here, and he has not ejaculated on that horse.
She says, this is the scene where she says, Malvette women could always be proud because they always stood up for the men they loved. This is just, it's a family tradition. A Malvette woman, regardless of what is going on with her man, she'll stand up for him. And so she's kind of chosen her place here. She is with Clay. And that's when Ben goes out and he's like, okay, I guess I'm leaving. But then he notices another horse, Clay's horse. And yes, he puts his hand on that horse, and his hand comes away with, what was going on?
It's an Arabian jizz horse.
It can only be that yeah. Someone had ejaculated upon that horse.
Likely it was Clay. Excited from taking another man's life with the butt end of his pistol, he had to do what he had to do.
This tells Ben that Clay is in there.
He went from using the butt end of his pistol to the pointy end of his pistol.
It wasn't real.
What was that white stuff?
Honestly, it's so strange.
It's meant to be, because when Clay arrives, he talks about how he rode in real hard and fast on his horse.
Oh, yeah. Sweat.
Yeah, it's horse sweat.
When I saw that scene, what I thought was, at first they went, they use water, and they filmed it, and they went, well, it doesn't look like anything. And then they used like silver paint, and they went, well, that's too much. And then they added some sort of ejaculatory style goo. And they went, yep, there it is. I mean, we've wasted enough time on this now. So why don't we just keep what we shot, and we'll figure it out when we edit the damn thing together.
Who's the Warner Brothers jizz boy? Is he on the lot today? Can we get him in here? Oh, Clark?
Hi, Clark. It was Mel Blanc's nephew.
He just walks around with
him. I'm being honest, it does look a lot like a signature cheese ball melted from Hickory Farms.
Oh.
Like a bacon and green onion cheese spread.
Cubby, you're being too honest. I think nobody who hears this is going to ever buy that again after everything we've said about it.
Well, I would, Cubby.
Okay. Well, all right.
Who was that?
This is Cubby.
Okay. All right. But now, by the way, it would have been enough for Ben just to have seen the horse, period. What difference does it make that the horse is sweaty? Doesn't matter. But yeah, they had a hard time. They had a real hard time depicting horse sweat, and that didn't need to do it in the first place. But now Ben knows Clay is in there. That's the important part of all this. So Clay inside there, he's got a plan to escape with Lita, but she's kind of like, well, hey, if you're innocent like you tell me you are, then go ahead on out there, present yourself to Ben, stand trial, everything will be fine. That's rational. But Clay doesn't want to do that because he knows he's guilty of killing Harvey Buford. Now,
he convinces her of a false equivalency where he says, did you steal that dress? Comparing her being sexually harassed at her egg job.
Right.
And him killing a man.
Yeah.
We're all in this together. but
the funny thing too is he must have some ethic where he's not going to lie to his wife, because she says, "Did you kill Harvey Buford?" And he goes, "Did you steal those shoes?" Which the answer to that is no, she did not steal those shoes. But that's not, that's a different subject.
It's totally a logical fallacy. It's just like, it's well, did you shave your legs this morning? It doesn't make any sense at all.
It is not an answer to the question
did
that's been asked.
Did you kill that man? Well, did you shave your legs? No, I didn't.
Then
I
therefore,
love you
it follows that I did not, would not have killed that
Let's
man. But
go out guns a-blazing.
Let me ask you, Clay Renton, did you come on that horse?
And they were going to go to start all over again rehab, where you grab a sack and you get a horseback ride. And
that's
you start
right.
anew.
You grab a sack and let it fly on the horseback.
Yeah, I forget what his role was going to be in their escape, but he throws her a gunny sack and says, "Fill it with all the things we'll need to hide out forever."
That was, now I don't know about you, I've been married 7 times, and at no time have I ever thrown any sort of luggage or packing material at one of my ladies and have that end well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's right. I don't, and what, well, we never get to see what she thinks ought to go in that bag, because the mob shows up. The mob figured it out. They got derailed by Ben up to some lake, but now they got to that lake and said, "Hey, wait a minute. Maybe we should go to the house where we know he frequents."
They did it again. They're going to collect that money on that bounty.
Yep. The mob shows up, including the Widow Buford, dressed in mourning. She is a sort of an odd person to tag along on the hanging posse.
Sure is. Recently deceased husband automatically in the lynching mob. This is Dalton.
Wait a minute. Hi, Dalton.
Well, people, a lot of men don't think women like violence, but we do.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess that's what
we like, mob justice.
Well, that's what she's there for. She wants to see it in her black shawl.
Excuse me, that's called a mantilla.
Oh, is that what that is that she's wearing?
Yeah, fuck. Don't ever anyone get that wrong again.
Oh, well, all right. I beg your pardon. Mantilla.
In fact, fuck this. I got to go.
No, wait. Don't go. I'll say it again. Mantilla. Okay. She's got a black. Well, edit it. Ryan, cut out where I said it was a shawl.
Oh, God. Sorry, I got a little charged. Sorry.
Okay. Well, so, all right. She says, what happens? She grabs a shotgun and he's so stupid that he says, oh, good plan. Well, I'll walk out there with you putting a shotgun on me and we'll make like I'm surrendering. And then things will happen and we'll get away.
He puts
his gun in his boot.
It's like a comedy scene. Like, oh, that's a really good idea, baby. And then it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But in fact, she means to aim a shotgun at this terrible man. Oh, you know what happens? You know what gives her to know that Clay is a scoundrel is that she grabs up her wedding dress. She's going to for sure put that in the gunny sack. And he throws it on the ground. Second
twice.
Time in this episode, that's somebody twice. Threw this poor you, woman's wedding dress on the dirt ground.
That's product. That's product. You can't take someone's, everything that they have in their inventory.
Yeah. I'd say throw my wedding dress on the ground once, shame on me. Throw it on the ground twice, shame on
I
you.
Do.
I'm getting I do, and I'm getting a shotgun. So
the plan is that Alita is going to pretend to turn him in. Is that what they're saying?
And then he'll make a run for it.
And then it seems like she would just hand him over then at that point.
Seem like the plan changed a couple times, too. I couldn't tell.
She's going to walk out with a shotgun. He's got a secret gun in his boot. They're going to say, all right, see, we're surrendering. All you angry mobsters, throw your guns in a pile. And then he pulls the gun from his boot and she opens fire. They kill them all and escape. Yeah, I think maybe that's...
And they live forever on all the food she's packed in that tiny gunny sack.
No, yeah. I think Ben Cartwright's the one that saves the day, isn't he? He suddenly you go, wow, he's fast. And he shoots Clay, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Well, because Lita betrays Clay and she says, take a look in his boot. I don't know why she doesn't just say, he's got a gun in his boot. She's being a little mysterious about it.
You all fellas up for a scavenger hunt?
Yeah.
First, inspect his boot.
What's black leather and goes around 10 little piggies?
Well, and the Malvet women now have not always stood by their men.
That's true. Mm. She has broken the Malvet tradition.
Broken the code.
Wow.
Well, I think she broke that code when she decided not to get her neck stretched with her brother and father.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. That's a good point. Well, now, Clay decides his best bet is to try to grab hold of that shotgun. And when he turns around to do it, Ben guns him down. And Clay, falling to the ground, dying, says, oh, almost like he's looking for sympathy from Ben. He's like, I just wanted to steal all your money.
And possibly kill you in an escape.
So just to confirm, you made the right choice.
Shoot me.
That's basically right. And then he falls down dead. Ben says he had a chance at something much bigger than a payroll heist, meaning the love of a good woman like Lita. And he blew it. He blew it by murdering Harvey Buford. Yeah. Oh, well. And then, well, now Lita has redeemed herself, and we find out why, story-wise, well, the widow Buford is there because she now is going to go apologize to Lita. And that's what ends our episode, an apology. Isn't that nice?
Do you think maybe she kills Lita, and that's just, we just don't see it?
No, I thought she was going to hire her as a retail shop fitter and dress designer for her clothing.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's right. Yeah.
Now the widow Buford is going to run Buford's dry goods, and there's going to be little eggs and dresses for humans as well.
Yeah. And she's going to rebuild her reputation by suppressing the false rumors from before, which is what I do for my husband. You know, he's made of dead other human beings, but that doesn't mean that he isn't a creature. He's fun.
I'm sure. Hey, I just want to say, though, if he starts trying to teach swimming lessons to little girls, keep him away from it.
Yeah, got that right.
Well, he is looking for work on monster.com.
Oh, God damn. Somebody's got to shut down that website. Finding all these jobs for monsters. Jesus Christ. Man, look, nobody ever said Frankenstein wasn't fun. I'm not surprised to hear he's fun. Problem is, he's a goddamn monster and a freak of science. Oh, Amy, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed to hear that you will stand by your man, even though your man is literally stitched together from dead bodies and animated with lightning.
Yeah,
terrible.
You're essentially standing by men.
Is not God in all of us, and therefore is he not a child of God? I don't know. I'm just spitballing. I just love him.
Well... I mean, love is, you can't do nothing about love. A man cannot tell a woman who to love, as Ben Cartwright says in this episode. But he can kill her husband. That is one thing he can do, or her fiance, in the case of what happens in this episode. Folks, that does bring this episode to a close, and I am sorry to say, it always breaks my heart to have to update this, but there's only 414 episodes of Bonanza left for us to talk about.
Oh,
it's really, really getting
tough. Where's the time go?
Yeah. Before you know it, it'll be less than 400, and then we'll be almost done. Sad. Well, folks, and anything further to say about this episode of Bonanza? Any other points you wish to make, or anything else about it?
I just want to say, if somebody comes to our house and tries to kill us, that there's just as good a chance we'll kill them or each other by accident, because we have guns in the house.
You say, would you say that the chances are equal that you will be killed, or that your assailant will be killed, or that you will kill one another? Those are all equal.
That's the same odds of going up against Spence when you taunt him to shoot you.
That's right. 50-50, except there's three options, so it's 33 and a third across the board.
Right.
Yep. Revolutions per minute. What were you going to say there, Mutt Taylor?
Oh, nothing. I just taken up from the Amy Sleeverson playbook, and I'm now selling an item based on this episode, which is a Palomino jizz chamois for your biggest horse. And you can pick those up at my shipping container. You have to drive up there to get it, and I will be in just white briefs and lumberjack spikes, but don't worry too much about it.
Okay, that's a good idea. Yeah. You can't leave ejaculate on a horse for too long. All right. Anybody else?
Yeah, I'd just like to invite y'all to come down to Winter Springs Mall to my Hickory Farms kiosk. We got discount Lily's Q barbecue rub set featuring Carolina Dirt barbecue rub, and we got baking smoke cheddar blend. Cheeses, wow. We're right by the Hot Topic. You can know it by the people wearing black capes, and they're real pale, and they're wearing makeup.
People wearing black capes? Right. Did you say capes?
Yeah, black capes. It's a Hot Topic right there.
Uh-oh.
I didn't know they was wearing capes at the Hot Topic.
And they're pale? And do they got, like, sharpened teeth?
Most of them, yeah.
But they take the bus.
They sure do, and they congregate right there at the Hot Topic, so that's how you'll know you're in the right place. You'll just see a bunch of people wearing black capes and just makeup and dark eyes.
I am not here to talk about monsters, but it sounds like you've got some goddamn vampires hanging around the Winter Springs Mall Hot Topic, aim to do something about it.
Dalton, I just want to say don't move your head, because right now your microphone screensaver makes it look like you got a real evil melodramatic Fu Manchu mustache.
I know. I noticed that myself.
I just took a screenshot. We'll put it up on the Instagram.
Yeah. That would be a very peculiar mustache, that on one side is a giant black circle and on the other side extends beyond your chin.
You either look like a melodrama villain or either Siegfried or Roy.
Yeah, I'll take it either way it comes. Anybody got anything they wish to promote? I know that you can find the album Mount Us More on a Bandcamp. That's the Journeyman's album. Is that where you find it?
Yeah, check it out. You can either search for the Journeyman Mount Us More or just go Super Ego and you'll find it there.
Man, that's the only country album you'll ever need. Amy Sleeverson, you got your Know Your Place dating service, and that sounds great.
Yeah, well, you're fine. I mean, I have a single who's currently up at Fresno State, and, you know, she's a gal who she's in, and she won't tell you what she's in for, but she gets out in 2032, and she just loves to draw and sketch and hopes to get into tattoo artistry, you know, outside of prison.
And she is available for love.
For love and marriage, and that's what she really wants, to get married. You know, she's not playing around.
I see. Okay, that's good to know, man. If you're tired of playing games and you're ready to get married to a woman who will be free by 2032, check out the Know Your Place dating service, right?
That's it. Your Place, where you'll meet your kind.
That's your kind. All righty. Well, that's it. Another episode of Bonanza in the Books. I do want to thank our guests, Shunt McGuppin, Cubby Lauterborn, and Jimmy Blades of the Journeymen, and as always, Mutt Taylor and Amy Sleeverson. Now, I move that we close this episode of Bananas for Bonanza. Will anyone second the motion?
Reluctant second.
Reluctant second. The motion is on the floor. Those in favor of closing this episode of Bananas for Bonanza signify by saying aye.
I abstain.
Are you abstaining?
I have an abstention.
Oh, all right. That's fair. You have a conflict of interest, so that's an abstention. But everybody else, the motion carries. And that is the end of this episode of Bananas for Bonanza. Thank you, fellas. Bye-bye.
Bananas for Bonanza is brought to you by Andy Daly, with Maria Bamford and Matt Gorley. Theme song by Matt Gorley, with The Journeyman, which in this case are Mark McConville, Daniel Michikoff, and Wade Ryan. Special thanks to our gang on the ground, Josh Richmond and Shannon Locke. Bananas for Bonanza is produced by Ryan Connor and Matt Gorley, and executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Beck. We'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.